was interested in Civil War stories because when I was a youngster, my father was a Civil War veteran. My mother's only one brother had been enlisted and was buried in a cemetery, Andersonville Cemetery in Georgia. He never came home. But father had three other brothers who had three brothers, and the four of them served from 2 to 3 or 4 years in the Civil War. So the Civil War was very close to me. That is, it was the main, and when I was a youngster, all of the things like Decoration Day and 4th of July, they were big events because these old soldiers were the people in the neighborhood who, and in the township and in the county, who kept be sure that those days were celebrated appropriately. And other things, of course, I became interested a great deal in world history because when I was teaching in my day, you didn't teach just history or geometry or physics or anything. You taught everything in the high school. For instance, I've taught physics and I've taught chemistry and Latin because there wasn't anybody else in the school system that knew any Latin, and I'd had a couple years in high school, so I taught a year of Latin at one time. And we taught geology and physiography and everything you can imagine. And so I became, because of my teaching of history in high school, I became very much interested in it. And there's in that library you can find many books, and that pile of books in the corner is one that I've just I got through the one of the book of the month clubs. It's a complete set of Durant's History of Civilization. I bought that. I'm going to give it to, I have two or three of them and beforehand, but I bought that for my daughter Rosalie as a Christmas present. That'll go to her as a Christmas present. I have read much of that material there, but I haven't, of course, that's quite a lot of reading there. But this office of county school superintendent was organized. The only supervision of the country schools was done by these school inspectors. Or for a few years before, there had been county school examiners. Now, the chairman of this county school board of examiners was supposed to visit the schools in his township. That is, or he was to appoint one of the township school inspectors to examine those teachers, those schools. But there was no professional examination of the teachers, of the schools. So in 1891, when they provided for the office of county school commissioner, they gave that commissioner the duty of calling on each school in his county at least once a year. Well, of course, if you had, like I did in Genesee County, 151 school districts, much of that visit, or much of those visits, were rather perfunctory. There is, you couldn't do much. You could go in, and if the teacher had good discipline and the pupil seemed to be studying, that's about all you could do, is go in and observe it. Once in a while, you'd see something that maybe the teacher was doing incorrectly, and you might try to correct it, tell her what was going on wrong. If the room was noisy, and the children were getting up and walking around, you could call her attention to the fact that she should keep a little better order. But that didn't happen so very often. Usually, the teachers had pretty good discipline. I used to tell them at the beginning of every school year, we had a meeting of all the school teachers in the county at the courthouse. And I would give them a little talk. I would tell them, now, when you go into your school, you are in full command the first day. It's according to how you handle a situation whether you remain in command. If you have a youngster, and you'll probably have many of them, who's going to try to see what he can get away with. And if you handle it properly, and it's the way it should be, he won't try it the second time. But if you just let him take advantage of you once, he's going to do it twice. And if you don't stop that right away, but if you just take it when they start something that they shouldn't do, if you stop it at once, because when you first go into that room as a new teacher, you are in command, and that's the thing you must maintain. So it wasn't very often that they had problems of discipline. I think during the 9 years that I was a county commissioner, I had to remove only two teachers because of the failure that they were in such bad, when I got there, I found them in such condition, the schools were just, had gotten away from them. I think only two instances during the 9 years.
What was the time span of 9 years between what year?
First became county superintendent or commissioner, I had great ideas of what I was going to do. I was going to just do a lot of things to make the schools better. But after two or three or four years, I began to be frustrated. The reason for my frustration is because at least one out of every three of the country school teachers were new each year. They were beginners. And any beginner has to learn how to teach, no matter how much she studied or anything else. She's got to learn how to teach. And I could see that under that way of teaching, one teacher had, if it were a large school, there were at least eight grades. And with eight grades, she sometimes could combine maybe teaching 7th and 8th grade physiology or 7th and 8th grade geography or something like that. She could teach the two grades together. She would have it somewhere between 25 and 30 classes each day. And probably at 30 classes, if you could give 10 minutes to a class, it would be all about all you could do. And I could see that those country children, while they could learn to read, and they could learn their multiplication tables and learn to add and subtract and things like that, they didn't get very good training. Whenever we had eighth grade examinations at the end of the year, only about 50% of those who wrote the examination would pass. There were different reasons for that, of course. Sometimes it would be poor teaching, but often it was because that beginning teacher didn't really know whether she had that a pupil was a good seventh grader or a poor eighth grader. So the seventh graders quite often were allowed to take the examination, and many of them, of course, weren't for passing the eighth grade. And then another thing that I could see was that of all of these children that did, we had in the county around 350, 400 years, and that number, if they passed 200 of them, we'll say, only maybe 15 or 20 of them would go on to high school. Now, the reason they couldn't go on to high school is they lived too far from the village schools. And many of those village schools in those days only had 10 grades. For instance, Schwartz Creek, Grand Blanc, Goodrich, when I first became commissioner, and Otisville only had 10 grades. As the years went by, they added others. For instance, when I was in Montrose, I went there in 1910, they had only 10 grades. Well, the ninth grade class that entered Montrose in 1910 was a large class, about 15, which would be in those days for a village school a large class. And when they became ready for the 11th grade, we added the 11th grade by having one more teacher in the school. And then that 11th grade became the 12th grade the next year and was the first 12th grade to be graduated from the Montrose School. Well, it was when that class went into the 11th grade, and of course in those days to be admitted to a college you had to have 2 years of some foreign language, and most schools gave that foreign language was Latin. And so there was nobody in the school that had ever even studied Latin, and I'd had 2 years of it under a pretty good teacher in Flint High School, so I taught 1 year of Latin. Now they think they have to specialize. In a way, that might be a good thing. But I think that if a teacher has to do a little digging to get ready for a class and do a little learning with the class, he becomes a better teacher. I know I never had, in all the years that I taught, any trouble in getting children interested in a subject because I was interested myself in that subject. There were many things that I could be learning while I was teaching. That is, if I wanted to try teaching a class in history, I was doing a little more reading in history than I had ever done before in order to keep just a little bit ahead of that class. And that's so when I could see so many of these country school boys and girls who wanted to go on to school, now, there's been some things that that made you think maybe that you did something worthwhile. 6, 7 years ago, I happened to run across a man out in the county schools, and when visiting with him, he said, "Weren't you the Mr. Regal that was commissioner of schools when I passed the 8th grade examination?" And I said, "Yes." Well, he said, "You had me all worked up, all enthused to go to high school. But when it came time to go, my father wouldn't let me go." Now, he was a man in his 50s. And ever since he was a little boy, 14, 15 years old, he had regretted and thought of not being able to go to high school because his father wouldn't let him go. Well, they lived, say, 5 or 6 miles from a high school. In the early days, 5 or 6 miles was a long ways because the only transportation was a horse and buggy or on foot. So it was almost impossible for him to go to high school. And that was the main reason why, when in 1917 they passed the Agricultural School Act, seems that all during every few years during the early history of the state, there had been many men dissatisfied with the district school that we were saddled with when the Constitution was adopted in 1837. They were dissatisfied with these men who were the school inspectors, then again by the county school or the township school superintendent. They could see that the little school districts weren't fulfilling their need, and there were at least 3 different times when the legislature was asked to pass a township unit bill, which would do away with the little one-room school districts and give the people in a township perhaps the right to build a central school and have a high school for each pupil. But those things were always defeated. Somewhere about 1887, that they defeated the bill because of the influence of the State Grange. But it seems that the State Grange got some new leaders, and in 1916 they appointed a committee to investigate the consolidated school idea, and the result of that committee, it was under the supervision of in 1916, the Grange had appointed committee with Doral Stockman, who was lecturer in the State Grange, as one of the members of this committee. And the result was that they favored a bill written which would let any 3 of these one-room schools consolidate and form what they called a rural agricultural school. In this new school, they would teach manual training, domestic science, that is, cooking and sewing, and agriculture. And the state would give to each district $200 for each bus that they needed to transport to help pay the cost of transporting the children to the new school. And one of the main factors in one of this new school was that they would provide a room in the school building where the people in the neighborhood could meet for their different neighborhood things they wanted to do, like perhaps have a lecture or have someone explain some different phase of living, and where if they wanted to have any kind of a meeting, rather a community meeting in that room. Now, that was probably, there had been consolidations in Ohio, and they sent this committee down to Ohio to get the idea of what these consolidated schools were doing for Ohio, and came back with glowing accounts of the success of consolidation in Ohio. And the result was this rural agricultural school. When any village or city was organized or started in Flint, it was usually on some river or creek where they could make a dam and use the water power to run some kind of a mill, maybe a sawmill or a grist mill or something like that. And the first place in Flint that had was such a dam was on the Thread Creek, and that is now called Thread Creek, the Thread Mill Pond or Pond. It's out here on the south side of Flint, and it is now when a village would they, and when they had enough people, 15 or 20 youngsters, this township board of school inspectors could make a school district. Now, there wasn't any limit as to the smallness of that district, but there was a limit as to the size of it. That is, the old expression was that there should be a school within the lengths of every child's legs, which meant that he should be able to walk to school wherever he might live. That is, the school couldn't be over, according to the law, more than 2 miles from his home, the schoolhouse. So when Flint was first organized, they had a school district on several square blocks on the north side of the river. And then they organized, another man made a plat on the south side of the river, and when he got a few, maybe in his part of the school, enough children for another schoolhouse, why they organized a second, and then a third, and then a fourth, and then a fifth. That is, at one time, what is now the school district of the city of Flint was made up of five of these one-room school districts. And that, of course, like in or anything, that was a way that probably all the cities at one time. For instance, the city of Detroit was made up of, the township of Detroit was made up of five or six, maybe seven school districts. But later, and the same thing happened in Flint. The legislature passed special laws that made one school district of the city of Detroit in about 1860, after two or three attempts to make a united school in Flint, the legislature passed a law that there should be, all the school districts in Flint would become under one school district called the Union School District of the City of Flint. And the same thing happened in Detroit and probably in Saginaw and Bay City and all over. That is, they became consolidated schools, in fact, because under the first law, each township had this board of school inspectors, and when there were enough children in a certain locality, we could make a separate school district of that locality. But by the time, and then the when these districts were first organized, there was no mention of any of the laws of a high school. And so when they first did add perhaps a ninth grade or studies that were in the ninth grade, they didn't call them ninth grade studies or 10th grade. They just added other subjects to the curriculum and maybe had a teacher who taught those subjects. But in the 60s, they began to call them high schools. And in 1775, they built, they finally got all the school districts of Flint. And in 1775, they had built the first high school. Well, that became one of the first, what they called, inspected schools or certificate schools. They were inspected by the committee of the University of Michigan, and their graduates were allowed in Michigan, and they were called, they called them in diploma schools because their diplomas were accepted by the university, and Flint was one of the first. Well, in 1903, after I had been in Davison, a little village east of Flint, in 1900, I was the first youngster in our section of the township of Richfield who took an eighth grade examination. Now, these eighth grade examinations, perhaps it might be interesting, they first started in 1893 after they had a county school commissioner. Up until that time, each school district, they had no, in fact, it wasn't until the late 1880s that the country schools were even graded, or even any talking of grading. That is, if a child, you'd ask him, what grade are you? And he wouldn't know what you meant. And if he'd says, where are you in school? Well, he's a fourth reader, or I'm in the big geography, was the way they expressed what they were doing in school. But in about 1890, they had begun, or in the 80s, they had begun to really form grades in school. And in 1893, I think it was, the first county eighth grade examinations were held. That is, they sent out from the to certain sections of the county, the superintendent or the commissioner would send out the questions and would have in each of the villages or in some place in the township someone conduct an examination for all of the children who were supposed to be in the eighth grade. And then those papers were marked by when they made the law establishing a county commissioner, they organized, or they had at that time, a county board of school examiners, and these school examiners, together with the commissioner, two men together with the commissioner, made a board of three who were known as the county board of school examiners, and they examined these children